We are in our prophet study section, of course. I am going to actually accomplish and finishing 1 Kings chapter 7. It's been a month and a half in this one chapter. It's a lot of stuff in this chapter, but we'll get ourselves started here in our prophet study and hopefully learn something of value out of the last few verses here. They do build on each other, so hopefully get some gain out of that. Starting in verse 40 through the end of the chapter. Hiram made the pots, the shovels, the bowls, and Hiram finished doing all the work that he did for King Solomon for the temple of the Lord. Two pillars, the two basins of the capitals that were on top of the pillars, the two nettings to cover the two basins of the capitals that were on top of the pillars, the pomegranates, 400 for the two nettings, two rows of pomegranates for each netting to cover the two basins of the capitals that were on top of the pillars. The 10 stands and the 10 lavers upon the stands, the one sea, the 12 bulls under the sea, the pots, the shovels, the bowls, and all these vessels that Hiram had made for King Solomon for the temple of the Lord, all made from pure copper. The king cast them in the plain of the Jordan in firm clay between Sukkot and Zarethan. Solomon set aside all the vessels because there were so very, very many, the weight of the copper could not be determined. And Solomon made all the furnishings for the temple of the Lord, the golden altar, the table upon which the showbread was of gold, the candelabra, five on the right and five on the left, placed in front of the inner sanctum, of fine gold with their flowers and lamps and tongs of gold. The jugs, musical instruments, bowls, spoons, and pans were of fine gold, and the hinged sockets of the doors of the inner house, the Holy of Holies, and those of the doors of the temple, that is, the sanctuary, of gold. When all the work that King Solomon had done for the temple of the Lord was completed, Solomon brought that which his father David had sanctified, the silver, the gold, and the articles, and placed them in the treasuries of the temple of the Lord. Those of you who recall, we've been going through 1 Kings chapter 7 quite extensively and with a, I won't say a fine-tooth comb, but at least combing through it as best that I was able to present to you. This ending of the chapter appears relatively innocuous compared to the rest of the chapter, but we'll discuss more details as far as what's actually being told to us in the end of the chapter. Before we go into any great details into it as to why it's written here and what value we gain from it, are there any questions regarding this portion or any other portion of this chapter we've covered regarding the pillars, regarding the stands that were made to duplicate the appearance of God's throne, regarding any of the other components that we've discussed so far? The Sukkot, the area is closer to the Jordan side of Jerusalem. It's heading toward the Jordan area where he cast them. The reason that area was usually selected is because sediment from the Sea of Galilee all the way down the mountains heads toward the Dead Sea, which makes very fine compact clay, perfect for digging molds out and pouring into your molten metal. The clay does not burn away or fall away like sand, like we like sand castings today, for example. Clay doesn't work that way. It's much more compact and easier to mold and fashion in intricate detail, but sand cannot be done. So the place is actually along the Jordan River on this, sorry, this side, the west side of the Jordan River, headed toward the Dead Sea area from outside of Jerusalem. It's a common place. It's also for the south too. There's some areas there that you can, inside the mountain range, you can actually dig out some dirt to make it. It's very fine, thick clay soil, and because it's so thick, because it's years and years and years and years and years of deposits. Do you have Well, that's on the other side of Jordan. There's two of them. But those are the areas which they usually cast them. It's very common. He's not the only one who used that territory. The other kings, not of Solomon's time, but of other kings of the nations, did it too. Any other questions or comments regarding this check section? Okay. So we read this, and what does it tell us? It tells us a whole bunch of parts, you know, the bowls or stuff made of metal, right? We obviously make of metal because usually there's a lot of fire involved, there's animals, there's whatnot. We discuss all these details. Why is this data in here for us? Is it just interesting information? It's not even that interesting, honestly. But is it just information for the fun of it? Does God give information and had it record down for the fun of it because he was bored one day and wrote it down? He had nothing else to do? There's probably a reason why it's here. I will not be able to cover all the in-depth details of all the components of this, but I will cover at least a portion of them. So bear with me today. First of all, I have my little chart here. You'll notice there's stuff that was made from copper and there was stuff that was made from gold. Why did God choose, or why did Solomon choose, which since he is the one who designed most of these components after talking to God and God disclosing this detailed information to him, why does God have a separation between gold versus copper components? Is there some practical use for it? Is some other
design? What it represents.
Say it again.
What it represents.
What it represents. You're right, it does. It has meaning behind them. There's a purpose why you would choose copper for something versus gold. Not just its practical use, meaning like a temperature, your threshold, cooking utensils, that kind of stuff. It actually has meaning deeper into it. You recall the statement, say it again? Value. There is intrinsic value. There's numerical value to it regarding gold, silver, copper. They all have their monetary uses. In the Bible, if you recall, I believe it was Haggai. I think that's who he said it. The gold and the silver are mine, says the Lord. With that statement, you've heard that many times in the past, I'm sure. I forget which chapter it is off the top of my head. Why does God want, or what value does he have with these metals? Oh, to be honest, did not God create them all? Could he make them out of thin air if he chooses? So what value are they? Why is it, I want to keep those? Why would God care? Yes, Fearanne.
Well, part of the metals, it's the refinement part that I think is symbolic. But also David was the one who had collected some of these elements for use and dedicated them.
You're right. David collected a lot of these. If you recall, when David was desiring to build God a house, he said, God, I live in a house of cedar and you live in a tent. I should build you a nice house? And of course, God tells him, absolutely not. Your son will build one, but you will not. And he explains to David later, or at least at some point in time, he said, because there's too much blood on your hands and I do not wish to have that part of my house. Of course, so Solomon's the one who built it. Well, so instead of David building a house and David lamenting that he could not build God a house, he instead praised God at the time, says, thank you, I will now collect all the stuff required to design and build this structure. So he went through and conquered all of his enemies. Took out kings, took out cities of all people they were against God or fought against him, and subdued them, capturing all their gold, capturing all the silver, capturing the copper, to build this. These designs, which I mentioned earlier, Solomon is one of the main designers in it. He's not the only designer. David actually designed a lot of this stuff as well. So God wouldn't have just spoken solely to Solomon. He actually spoke to David too in many ways. So David would also be a designer. And of course, Hiram, the man from Tyre, from north the king of Tyre. Yes, from at least from the area, whether it's from the city or not. There is also a relative of either the tribe of Dan or the tribe of Naphtali. It depends on which scripture reference makes more sense to you. And also, he would be inspired as well to design and intricately work these details. Now, we had discussed previously regarding the great big sea that was 12,000 gallons worth of water in it, used to wash the priests, as well as to wash the components of its utensils when they're being used, and in some cases, to wash the sacrifice or parts of sacrificial animals, because there are certain sacrifices required, the entrails had to be washed, and various components had to be washed too. We discussed that in great detail last time regarding what its purpose was, the 12 bowls underneath it that held its weight. Bowls were approximately full-size bowls of if not solid copper, at least a very thick copper, that was holding the weight of this copper bowl that was also a hand-breadth thick, about 4-inch thick bowl that was, 30 feet or so, roughly in diameter. So it's a fairly large bowl. And it held 12,000 gallons of water, designed, of course, to wash priests. And, of course, priests would take their little smaller bowls of 6 gallons or something apiece and pull those out and wash. I think it was six gallons per. Oh, well, I forgot the units. It's like 40-something gallons, anyway, that they used to do all these details. We discussed what the purpose of them were. Yes, Pierre?
Is the basin also known as the laver?
The small containers that would be on the carts the priest would use, those are levers. The great sea was the sea. They called it a sea. And we said it's about the size of a swimming pool. Made it a little bigger. In its size. Of course, you couldn't bathe in it. That was against the rules. But you could, you know, dip water out of it for its use. And do you remember what we discussed about those details? We had talked a little bit about the purpose of them. See, I have them down here in my little list. We talked about that there was an obvious reference and symbolism designed on the layout of the tent while they were in Moses' time as the ark was moving and ark was settling down with the three tribes on each side of the ark being in the middle. And that the sea with the 12 bulls in it were designed the exact same way. There were three facing each of the four sides of this big round sea. And it was designed to mimic or appear like the tabernacle in the wilderness in the same design. Now, we also discussed that at the time the lavers were smaller basins held by a stand with four wheels. The wheels don't turn. They were designed specifically to look like or appear like Ezekiel's vision of God's throne. It mimics it very, very well in great detail. So it tells you that the design of the sea and the lavers and the stands are designed to remind you of the ark in the wilderness and the ark of the covenant with all the tribes, the traveling around, and the God's throne that would travel from the center out to the people to wash or cleanse, which in this case was used to travel out and wash and cleanse the priests or their sacrifices. So we talked about that in, I think, fairly good detail. We had also talked about the pillars and the pomegranates and the nettings and the capitals and the two big posts that he had in front of the tabernacle, the temple, and discussed what their function appears to be. And though they have no counterpart in Exodus, meaning no example of two pillars in Exodus that Solomon was copying, they appear to be indicative or direct our attention toward the kingdom or the kingly line. Because the pomegranates were on there correspond to the exact number of years that Israel and Judah had a king. And then when Israel and Judah ceased to exist, was 392 years later, that's the exact number of pomegranates were on these two pillars, 392. It's not a coincidental number, it is an exact number, which God chose. And granted, I realize your Bible is recorded at 400 even rather than 392. That's because, if you remember, I spoke at the time, Jeremiah is the only one who actually counted each of them and said there were exactly 392, as opposed to arbitrary, oh, there's 200 here and 200. No, it was not. It was 196 there and 196 there. That's the actual number. He counted them. So we know that his count made sense. And we know what pomegranates mean. They are a royal fruit, and it corresponds to the number that the kings ruled. So, and these items, of course, were all made of copper. Now, we also know that there are shovels and bowls and pots and other items that are used. Sorry, also made of copper, which it records here as well. Pots, shovels, and bowls, what are those commonly used for? They are for ashes. As the book of Exodus clearly states in, I think it's chapter 26, where is that? 27, I apologize. Chapter 27 and 26 and 28. All three chapters, I talked about them. The ashes in the big altars that get burned up and the cows and everything else, and they go up in the ashes, they get cleaned out. But they looked at it, which is anything, had to be these particular shovels and bowls that were used to clean them out with. You didn't just dump them out on the ground. You had to scoop them and remove them from the temple. You could not leave it inside. And pots, of course, corresponding also to the animals that were cooked there at the temple as well. So, and like birds, for example. So all these items are made of copper. So God selected these components for copper, but these components over here, God said, no, you're making these out of gold. Why? Now, I would like to point out one minor detail. I realize that our little menorah back there and the items, they have a gold appearance. It's because they're brass or bronze. Reality is, the Bible's definition of what that, well, yeah. No, I realize that. But now, about the vision of what the copper is, your Bible most commonly says it brass or bronze. Probably very common in English words. It actually is copper. It's not actually brass or bronze. It is actually copper, like red copper, like a red, yeah, like a copper. You can refine copper components and get the copper out of these mixed metals, which we add them to these other metals in order to gain other details out of them. But it's actually just copper. So all these items look red. They look like copper does, or orangish red. It's kind of it's like copper. That's what you can use the name to describe the color. It is copper. That's its color. So that's what the appearance of them are. I realize copper tarnishes and it starts looking green. So guess what? You have to clean it. Bummer. Get over it. Deal with it. So copper gets clean. It has to be done to it. But they are copper in particular. So God's using copper here and he's using gold there, which looks different. I want to point that out because you can then see from a long distance, 100 feet away, oh yeah, that's copper, that's gold. If you're looking at brass and gold, I have a gold ring. I held it up the thing, you know what? And they look really, really similar. I couldn't tell the difference unless I actually picked it up. Oh, this is heavy, this is not. Oh, one's obviously gold, one's not. Then I could tell. In this case, you didn't have to do that. You can see from a distance if the green tarnishing was at least removed. You can see the difference between the two of them. So you know these components God said, I want them to look like and be used as copper. These components I want to be as gold. Why? What's the difference? What does it matter? As Mark pointed out, they mean something. Yes, Pat. It's a pure end. A pure end over there. Sorry, Pat.
The norm, which
yes.
is light.
Light.
And the table of bread, the show bread, mm-hmm. Christ is known as, you know, the bread of life, and it has to do with life and light and who God is, and these refer to him as opposed to the other ones.
That's so. Fair. That could explain the table and the menorah. Altar of incense is praise, possibly. Actually, it's a little bit more accurate to say prayer than is it praise. So it's a little prayer. How do you spell prayer? P-A-Y, thank you. Thank you for bearing with me, my poor spelling and penmanship. Okay, so altar of incense has praise, or it's more accurately for prayer, which is combined in it, because they are built in a similar design. Now, there are other items too, which we'll get to those shortly. These are not the only symbolisms, but these are part of them. But I also want to point out, in 1 Kings, it records a single table that Solomon made, but in Chronicles, it actually says there are 10 tables corresponding to the 10 menorahs. So there's a table for each menorah. You can argue which one's right, which one's wrong. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to argue it. The point is that there's most likely there were 10 tables, just for the nature of what Solomon was doing. He corresponded, made duplicates of everything. They match each other. Because he said in Chronicles, he recorded them as right and left, along with the menorahs, right and left, the five on each side. So there's probably 10 as opposed to this section of the Bible says just one, but that's a minor detail. So these components, they have a different function, I would say, than the copper components over here. Now, as a point, okay, altar of incense, praise or prayer. What's the altar of incense used for? You remember what it's used for? What Moses was told to Aaron, all right, when you go into the temple to meet God, you have incense, which you burn on it and put smoke up, and it fills the room with smoke, and of course, scent as well. And in one application, it prevents you from actually seeing the Ark of the Covenant when you're walking into the Holy Holies, because if you got to see it, maybe you might accidentally see something you're not supposed to see. potentially, we don't know the details of what Aaron would or wouldn't see when he walked in there. But we do know there's a cloud that God dwelled in, and the cloud was inside, and if it showed up, you had to get out for various reasons. So there were details regarding that. But the incense itself, which we discussed in years for years and years and years, appears to be a prayer-based idea. The incense, the smell of smoke, it's designed to give the imagery of prayers going up. That seems to be its intention. The altar of incense is made out of gold. Why didn't God choose copper for it? Why not silver? Why not iron? Copper lasts a long time. Well, it depends how refined it is. When it says fine gold, we don't know how well they did it. Well, it's a table. It's a table. I mean, we make tables out of wood. Cheap wood. Particle board. Make tables out of particle board. they can make plastic molded tables. Cheap ones that fall apart. Why did God want that one made out of gold?
Because of its value.
Its value, possibly. Maybe there's a reason for the value.
The cleansing of the priests and things, the pure and the holy and the righteous are all part of God, and to be valued much more so than the other things.
That's true. It is. And notice these particular, by the way, I'll finish a few of these other items and we'll be able to discuss this probably in more detail. There are other things also made of gold. There's jugs. Jugs for what? Well, there's wine and there's water, both required for all the sacrifices. In most sacrifices, there's wine, or we call it libation offerings, that when you put the sacrifice up onto the altar, whatever it's supposed to burn, you have to pour a certain amount of a hin of wine, for example, or oil, onto the offering as it's being burned up. It has, I don't remember if I mentioned this to you before or not, I think I did. Wine, its objective or its symbolism is gladness. That this offering represents gladness for you putting wine upon it. As opposed to what the pagans did, they put blood upon it, which is the opposite of gladness. It is what it would, it's the corruption of, it just destroys it all. That's a messed up, screwy thing, which a lot of the kings of Israel wind up doing for other reasons, and we'll talk about that later. But those jugs held the wine, held the oil for these offerings. The musical instruments? Why would God want a musical instrument out of gold? Silver sounds better. We have silver bells in the valley. It had more ringing tone. But he wanted these made of gold, a musical instrument. What's the purpose? We have bowls and spoons and pans and hinge sockets, door hinges. All these items made of gold. Why? Well, I've asked it why enough times. Let's start giving some answers. First of all, where are these items, are the gold items, located? The holy place. Does anybody allowed to go in there and use them? No. Remember Belshazzar? I think he got busted for that. The writing on the wall. These items, these utensils, are used in certain applications that are gold, while the ones over here in copper are used in other applications. These particular gold items that are recorded, obviously their duplicates or similarities are also recorded in Exodus, a few chapters in there, discuss a lot of them. They seem to have a, as Pat alluded to and I have written up here, a more holy concept built into them than the copper side does. Well, I should explain to you what I mean. Altar of incense. When you are praying, what state of mind are you in? Are you in the state of mind of, oh, I got to work tomorrow. Oh, I forgot to cut the grass. Yeah. Hopefully you're focused on God. You don't want to be in that other state of mind, do you? You want to be focused on God. Now, question. The table of bread. What is that table supposed to do? It's supposed to hold 12 loaves.
So it's
120
loaves.
120 loaves. A lot of bread. A lot of, has purpose to it. There's also note, there are 70 lights with the menorahs.
70?
Yeah. 70. That's another number. Yeah. So that's, we'll discuss that maybe some other time. But what's the table supposed to do? It's designed to display with the menorah behind it, behind the table, to shed light down upon this gold, very shiny table, the 12 loaves of bread, to shine them and reflect the light to who? Toward who, I should say. Does it reflect it to the priest? Toward God. If you recall Moses' description of what the menorahs were designed to look like, now I realize that Solomon had his redesign done a little differently, but still the principle is the same, is they were direction specific. They actually had, according to the description given in Moses' time, cups or backdrops to the light that actually pointed the light facing forward, not just like we have, which just light goes everywhere. It actually has a specific direction. It points towards something. Now, God said, and leaves in Zechariah, that each of these lights represent an angel or an eye of God as he observes and watches and looks around the world. That's its function. So what are these eyes doing? They're looking at the bread, because they're reflecting at the table, and they're looking toward God. So what's God supposed to be seeing when he sees these lights and this table and the bread? The 12 loaves each table.
Do they represent the tribes?
12 tribes, what it would normally represent. But 12 loaves correspond, actually Moses describes it, you have one loaf for each tribe. So it's 12 loaves, 12 tribes. So God seeing his chosen people, he's seeing perfect. It's a gold menorah with a gold bread, or sorry, a gold table, reflecting 12 loaves of bread, which actually this is 10 tables, there's 120, but there's a lot of tables, all reflecting, and all he sees are his people. Now, if you shine a light on a fine gold object that's flat, what does it do? It bounces the light back, doesn't it? It bounces it off, it doesn't hit back, but it bounces off to some direction. Now, these tables are gold, so they don't corrode like copper does. They're actually designed, when they're reflected, they stay reflective, unless somebody scratches them, like you rebuild the table or fix it. So these tables of showbread are designed to reflect these bread items, these 12 loaves per table, back towards, in the direction specific, toward God. So what's he looking at? He sees praises, he sees the light, as we did the menorah, and he, well, gold tongs, of course, but that's just work, that's just tools that go with it. And he sees his people. He sees people. That's who he's looking at. The 12 loaves correspond to people. We know what that means. That's what Moses told us that much. So that's what God's looking at. And what does he see in them? He sees perfection. They're perfect. They're bright. They're goodly or attractive in appearance. That's all God sees when he sees those items. Blood's over here. that's for the Messiah, which we'll discuss that. Not on these items, and on different items. Okay. So that's what he's seeing. He sees gold as reflective. It's perfect in its design. It's perfect in its reflection, its reflective ability. Designed to God to see those items. So if that's what these items appear to be, what could possibly be the reason for these other items being gold? Possibly the same reason. The jug of oil or water or wine, whatever happens to be held or used for. There are libation offerings discussed in the Torah. There are wine offerings. There's also oil that corresponds to those offerings too. When God stores or those items are stored, if you recall what wine means to gladden both the hearts of God and man, as the Bible records it to be, if that's what wine means, God's going to receive wine, what is it? It has to be perfect. It is designed for a gladdening. When the people were required to put wine on their offerings, not every offering, but certain ones, in particular ones for holy days, almost all of them required wine on it, those are designed to give the impression or the appearance of gladness by the person who's offering. That's its function. It's always been its function. It always will be. So that's what wine's supposed to be. When you are glad and you were offering something to God, what does he see in you? Perfection. That's perfect. You're perfect. That's exactly what he wants. Perfect. Musical instruments. When you are singing to God, and you are singing about him, as the Levites did quite numerous occasions, at least it's recorded, not just in revivals, but in other areas as well, in other books, regarding the psalms they sing, and they use musical instruments off the temple. What instruments were they using? Gold ones. And what did God receive in his ears when he knows these gold, the music is coming from his gold instruments that are perfect? Your worship is perfect. It's excellent. It's the best. Bowls and spoons and pans. What on earth are those used for? All right. Spoons, actually, utensils in general. Actually, it's for flush hooks in most applications. In this particular case, bowls and spoons and pans and the gold tongs to correspond to menorah, those are nothing more than the items required to offer your offerings to God. I do recall there actually are a number of offerings which required to be cooked. Remember those correctly? And they do it to be offered to God. And what do you cook them in? Pans and bowls and those items. What the ashes also from the menorah and from the altar of incense, what does God want those used for? What do you do with the ashes? How do you get rid of them? They are perfect. They came from perfect items to be cleaned with a perfect tool. They're perfect. Everything here on this gold side is designed, as far as God's eyes are concerned, to be a perfect item. It's perfect symbolism, perfect worship, perfect heart, perfect mind, perfect spirit, perfect prayer. Everything is perfect on that end. If all of these are perfect, and by the way, there's lots of scriptures regarding gold and other metals too, in its refinement and its purpose and its function, in that the high priest, for example, in Exodus 26:28, what metal, the only metal he had on him was what? Gold. The high priest is perfect. So there are silver too, which we'll discuss silver shortly. Yes, Piran.
Can you elaborate on the word perfect?
Perfect. Let's see here. Pure. I don't know if I can elaborate much more than that. I use the term perfect as just what it is. Well, it is a complete metal. It's in its nature and what its function is. As far as, don't get me wrong, I don't wish to claim that gold represents God. It's not. It's nothing more than a tool, a piece of a hunk of matter he happens to be requiring us to use. It's nothing more than that. But it's the symbolism of what we desire. For example, most people, it could be wrong, most people presume or assume that gold is a valuable metal.
God said it's
valuable. People said it's valuable. Most people assume it's fairly valuable. Is it more valuable than, say, for example, silver? Most people would say it actually is far more valuable. If you recall, the current sale for gold is for like $1,600 or $1,700 per ounce, and silver is like $30 or $40 an ounce, something like that. Carrie.
I could be wrong on this, but I think from schooling and everything, usually one of the main reasons why it's been considered more valuable is because it doesn't corrode as easily as most other metals.
Right. It's incorruptibility. Now, technically, gold can corrode. It does not corrode like other metals do, but it does. It does tarnish over time. There's another property that has to do with what environment it happens to be in, but that's a physics problem. Because even the apostle pointed out, don't put your trust in things that corrode like metal and silver, or gold and silver, because they do dissolve, they do destroy over time. So gold does have its weaknesses. But as far as these people are concerned at their time, it was a perfect metal. It is the most desirable one they could. Now we're discussing platinum and some unique, crazy stuff they make today. This is just what they had available, which they could mine. I can't gain more symbolism out of that as far as what its function is than what I've told you regarding gold. I am not a metallurgist. I don't have great details regarding its design. I do have small amount of details on its refinement ability, but that's a different story. That's more has to do with how you melt it down, how you get the other metals out of it. But that's not my expertise, so I couldn't explain it better than that. Yes, Jeff.
One of the reasons why it's been used a lot in jewelry in lots of cultures over time is that, number one, it's pretty, but number two, it's very easy to work with.
That's true. It is very soft metal. You're right. Absolutely right. It is soft and easy to work with. It's also used in electronics for other reasons, too, but for its great corrosion resistance and conductivity. That's an electronics problem. But these items, as far as these items appear to me, when I look at them and look at their use, the gold items, they appear to be focused upon God. Now, contrast that to the items that were made of copper. What do they seem to be focused upon? Well, let's see here. Let's look at this in greater detail. So pots, shovels, and bowls, they actually are used for ashes. I'm a terrible speller. And the pillars, the capitals, the netting, they were used for the kingdom. Oh, actually, kings more specifically, the kingly line of both northern and southern tribes. And the stands, lavers, the sebel, they were used for washing priests. Is it IE or EI? They. If I could spell, I'd be a totally different line of work. So, these items, I have a question for you. Are these items regarding your relationship to God? Did the ashes off of the burnt animals, is that anything related to you and God? It's you, specifically, but not necessarily your relationship to God. The kings, the pillars are made of copper. Granted, they're not actually temple parts, but they're still listed here. Have they any relation between you and God? No, they're specifically a people. They represent the people itself. So that's just those two happenstances. Okay, now, the stands and the lavers and the sea and the bulls. Now, yeah, are they a relationship between you and God? Not exactly. They're kind of more you than they are God. I mean, God doesn't want a dirty person coming to him. Go clean yourself first. Wait, now, what do you have to say to me? It's more of a perfecting or cleansing yourself first. Now, all of these other items and their use, do the items, the jugs, that carry the wine and carry the oil that you are offering to God, is that a relationship between you and God? Because it's supposed to gladden God too. It's actually to God. It's actually more relationship toward God, so more so than it is from you. What about the musical instruments? They're singing to God. So that's even more relationship to God than it is to you. The bowls and the spoons, the pans, and the hinge sockets, we'll get to those shortly. The bowls, spoons, and the pans, regarding the offerings that are given to God and have been given to him, they are actually his at this point. Those utensils used to give them to him, are they relationship between you or more relationship between you and God? They seem to me more toward God. They're more toward your direction toward God than is toward you. To me, I look at these items and say, all right, these seem to be a relationship that's less about me and more about him. You can debate those details, but less about me, more about him. And in particular, the hinges and the sockets. Those are the most important things in a relationship that's all about God. Because who's allowed to open the doors? High priest. Are you allowed to go in there? No. Who else goes in there? Just him. Once a year. That's only about God. The hinges and the sockets are only about him. Those are his doors. You're walking into his house. So nothing to do with you at all. So these items appear more God-centered than these items over here, the copper items. Why? Why does God want a distinction between the two? What would it have mattered if the copper items were made out of gold? Would it have hurt anyone? What about silver? What's wrong with that metal? Why couldn't they have been made out of precious metals like that? Yes, Ellie.
It wouldn't have been a picture.
The picture
he deliberately divided it so it was an obvious picture.
And what picture, other than what I've described so far, could be included in that? Let's discuss this. I have a little Hebrew word written up here. I apologize, I didn't write it very clearly. Again, penmanship issues, I'm not great at that. It's supposed to say, nachshet, which means copper. Any of you heard the term nachash? Remember that guy? Remember that person's name? Nachash. Let's see here. Nachash was, I believe, from, it was Ammon or Amorite. I don't remember. Ammon, I think it was. I think it was Ammon. Nachash, spell his name right. We talked about him when I was going through earlier in Samuel. That talked a lot about him. He was a particular king that came against Jabesh Gilead. It was the ancestral town of Solomon's ancestors, because Solomon was part of Benjamin, and that's where the brides came from when Benjamin did some screwy stuff, and we won't go through the details right now. But Jabesh Gilead was sieged by a man named Nachash. Nachash surrounded it, and they said, and the gentlemen, people of Jabesh Gilead said, all right, we will surrender to you, so what are your conditions? He said, well, I'm going to cut off your hands. Those aren't great conditions. give us 7 days to see if anybody will come and save us. And if no one's going to come, okay, you can cut our hands off. He said, okay, not a problem. He was looking for a fight anyway. So they sent a message back, and of course, this is his first campaign. King Saul gathers people together, and they all go fight against Nachash, the bad guy. And they conquer him, and he goes off back to where he came from. Well, Nachash happens to also be one of David's friends. Coincidental enough. And when Nachash died, his son, of course, comes over, and David sends good tribute to him, and of course his son shaves off half the beards and half the hair and strips off half the clothes of the 10 guys that David sent. And of course, it goes to a big war and things happen. But Nahash is the, actually, not the root word, but one of the earlier root words of Nahashet. Do you remember what Nahash actually means? It does not mean copper. It means snake. Snake. Snake, a serpent. So Nahash means serpent. But Nahashet means copper. Nahashu, which is actually the bit closer to root word, it means red, like the color of a snake, or also a ringing bell, a sound that comes out of it. These names tell you the purpose of this stuff over here. It's human. It's people. It's our evilness, our fiery wickedness within inside of us. That's what copper is designed to represent. Those of you who recall back in the wilderness of Moses in Numbers, there was something that bit everybody. And there was something that had to be shoved up on a pole. What was that something? It was a snake. What did Moses make the snake out of? Copper. Why? Because the snake was copper, and the bad snake was copper color, and they're poisonous. Ever heard of copperhead? they are viper snakes. That's what copper means. It is a viperous, disgusting, evil thing that you want to get rid of. Question. When you're washing yourself, what are you trying to get rid of?
Dirt,
filth. When you're cleaning out the ashes, what are you trying to get rid of? Ashes, dirt, the stuff we didn't like, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it. The kings, what are they full of? Pollution and corruption. So, copper was not just an arbitrary metal. Let's choose that for the fun of it. God was bored. No, it actually means something to him. He isolated the items, but he said, "This reminds me of you." It's copper. It's poisonous. It's dirty. It corrodes. Turns green. It's quite unattractive, actually. This stuff over here, however, reminds me of what I want to receive from you. It's perfection. Gladness in the wine. The prayers of incense. The musical instruments. The music of praise. That's what God actually wants to receive from you. So what he wants from you is gold. What do you have to do first? Get rid of your poisonous filth first. Then come closer to me where the gold is, where you are now perfect. Inside the temple are these items. Now granted, there's other items as well. There's items made out of silver. There's items made out of wood. There's items made out of stone, of course. Lots of different other components in it. We discussed those at various times, in particular the wood, and what its function was, and what the symbol, different types of wood symbols meant, from cedar to, I forgot all of them, cypress, and what those symbolisms were, and what those woods mean, and why they were used for certain things. Well, if wood's done that way, and there were trees, of course, and other pomegranates and almonds that were carved out, if those mean something to God, then gold and copper and silver are going to mean something to God also. So God wanted specific types of wood used for certain furniture items, and there were certain types of metals used that he wanted at certain applications. They meant something to him. So what do we gain out of all of this? What knowledge can we then take home with us? If we take nothing else home, now granted, there's other stuff I won't discuss today because I'm out of time, but if we take nothing else with us, take this much. Copper, or when you approach God to use copper, that's the symbolism behind it, get rid of the garbage.
And
tarnishing. Get rid of that stuff. That's what God doesn't want. After you've done that, then give him what he actually wants. Now, we always say, oh, well, you know, even a sinner can pray to God or to repent. Yes, of course. That's the point. Repent first and then go over here. That's the symbolism I want to get across to you, if nothing else. Now, there are other details I did not cover today. There are actually specifics about the fact there were 10 lavers and 10 stands, not just one, and 10 menorahs and 10 tables of showbread, not just one. They actually have other numerical meanings to it, which I'm not going to cover because of the time. But the purpose behind it is this stuff God requires in order for you to get rid of the garbage, in order for you to go over to this stuff over here, which he actually wants. See, it's just required stuff to get rid of the garbage versus what he actually wants stuff over here. Where do you want to be? In the wants section, not in the garbage section. Make sense? There's reason. Now, how do you do all that? How do you get rid of the garbage? How do you just dispose of it? Yes, Ellie.
Well, the key is in ashes, because we are ashes to ashes. We live and we die. This is death, and that's life. And the only way you get rid of it and live through it is to let yourself die, let your ways die. You can die physically if you choose, but the better way is to let yourself die so that you can have life without experiencing a total permanent physical death. This is still death, and that's still life.
Right, it is. You're absolutely right. In those ways of how you get rid of or dispose of or wash away your filth, what tools do you use? What actions do you do? How do you do those things? Well, the same way they did it. I'm not saying go out and build an altar. That's absurd. I'm talking about what they were doing, the concept behind what they were doing. When the ashes, they remove the ashes, what are they actually offering that those ashes came from? Well, they were bulls, and they were cattle, and they were very sheep and goats and blah, 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 blood. Icky stuff in some cases, but good things too in some certain applications. Does that mean we should go offer off dead things and kill off a bunch of animals?
For various things, depending
right.
upon like,
what you did or what you needed.
Whether it was a sin offering
right.
or
a cleansing purpose or sanctification, yeah. whatever uses were. So how do you do that? By the way, in case you hadn't noticed, we don't actually have a temple functioning now. So, and Kate, how do you do that now? Well, we talked about this at the feast at one point in time, which these various symbols, those animals, meant something. Not just like physically the animal, but actually had a spiritual application to it that you can apply to your own personal life. They have praise built into them. They have dance built into them. They have mental state of being built into them. They have ways in which you yourself have to be in order for them to apply. They have function. To get rid of your ashes, you have to be in a certain state. Destroy the stuff that you know is garbage. We all have garbage in our lives. I do, you do, you do, she does, everybody does. What do you do with it? You want God to hear your prayer? Destroy the garbage first. And then let's go over here to the altar of incense and pray to him. There was a gentleman, I don't recall his name off the top of my head, a rabbi back in the 12th century. He wrote and prophesied the destruction and rebuilding of all of Israel with the Ottoman Empire like 700 years, 800 years before they even happened. He was, I forgot his name, he lived in Germany. He wrote a number of books, but one thing he always said, and all of his students said of him, Catholics would come to him and ask him, how do I get my prayers answered? Other Jewish people would come and ask him, how do I get my prayers answered? Even a Muslim came and came to him, how come I can't get my prayers answered? He said, one thing you have to be to get all your prayers answered, whether the answer is good or bad, you still get them answered. But one thing you have to be, your state of mind must be focused solely upon the glory and the power of God and everything he's done for you when you are praying. How do you do that? It's called getting rid of the garbage and become over here where the gold is. It's within you. It's within inside of you. You're supposed to be a temple, right? So be a temple. Cleanse the garbage out, and then you get your prayers answered. Now, the answer might be no. That's a different story. We're discussing what the answer is. But the point is to get your prayer answered. You have to have your mind and body and everything about you focus upon not yourself, where the poison is, but upon over there where God's at. Why would he listen to you? Does God listen to prayers of a bunch of sinners? He listens to pleas of sinners, the pleading of them, mercy upon them, but it doesn't say he listens to all their prayers. Quite the opposite. Cleanse yourself first. You're no longer a sinner. Guess what? He'll hear your prayers quite happily. It's within you. That's what I want you to get out of this, if nothing else. Those are the details which I didn't cover about silver and other components, because the silver is a messianic metal versus gold and copper, which are man and God. Silver is strictly Messiah alone, which has a different symbolism behind it. But that, there actually are a number of components here, not in this chapter, but they're in the temple. They're also made out of silver, and they have messianic nature, which we won't discuss that today. Any questions or comments? Yes, Jeff.
One of the things to notice is that when you go into the tabernacle, temple, etc., it's not empty.
Right.
Even on Yom Kippur, it's not empty. There is always a priest. And
yep.
The only way anyone is ever going to move anything through from the copper side to the gold side
through him.
Is through the priesthood.
Right. It's through him.
And that's one of the...
It's through the silver, which I didn't talk about. But yeah,
right.
It's through the silver.
One of the key points in that is that there is always a carrying through of things from one side
mm-hmm.
to the other.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key reasons why, like in Galatians 6:1, it's like, when you go out and you deal with somebody who's got a problem, who's kind of still stuck on the copper, the realm of the snake, so to speak, that's to be a form of like a priest to help through to the realm of God and gold is someone who can actually help them through that.
Right.
However, to be careful, because the realm of the snake is very, very attractive and can be a bit of a pit in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pun intended. He's absolutely right. We all know that once saved, always saved, not discussing that issue technically, but once you've gotten rid of your garbage of copper and you come over the gold side, what happens then? Do you stay over the gold side? Or flesh and blood? We know what happens to us. We always return back to copper. We can't get out of that. That's who we are. So each time you have to get rid of that stuff. And as you rightly pointed out, this, which I didn't talk about, was silver in particular, which is the silver is the intermediary metal. It's kind of funny, but it is. It's the one that's in between value and has its own purpose. And it requires the same, or actually greater refinement in some cases than gold does, and has more uses than copper does in the same applications. But in itself is a refining aspect. It is the cleansing process of what God said he would put through all of Israel, all of Judah, would go through a cleansing process, a fiery furnace to burn off all the, quote, dross, or the pot, or the gross metals and disgustingness off of you, and turn you into pure silver. That's the goal. And this isn't quite easy. Note, when they came from here, the copper side, to the gold side, what did they have to go through first? They had to wash themselves. And once you wash yourselves, that means you get to go over here to the gold side? Well, not exactly, no. Washing's part in the long chain of events. Because the washing self, as he pointed out, or we were discussing, is one of the steps. It's a process which you go through. It's a carrier. What must you go through first? It's called the offering, and you get burned first. It's ashes. And what your offering gets washed to, it's kind of, they're mixed with one another. But a burning happens first. A purification happens first. The cleansing happens first. And you can't get out of that step. Who gets to do it for you? It's not you. High priest alone does that. Only he does this. The burning process isn't you. It's what you bring to him is burned, but you yourself don't get to do it. Only he does. He's absolutely right. An intermediary is required to go from the copper side to the gold side, and he's the silver one. Does it make sense? Thank you for your time. Have a wonderful rest of Shabbat, and God bless you.